Now, chemical industries have got a huge set of waste streams that come out that can be problems. The chromium-6 that I just talked about was an issue. Chloralkali plants around the world have been a major problem because the process, which we'll look at a little bit later in the course, uses mercury zero, liquid mercury, to produce chlorine, which is used in household bleach and lots of other processes. If you want white paper, you bleach it. Where do you get that bleach from? From the chloralkali process. So thinking about the volumes of paper on the planet, you can imagine there's been vast amounts of chlorine produced using this. Now, in the process of using the mercury, it's recycled, but there's always some loss, and that loss invariably has ended up in rivers. The other thing that was hopefully appreciated after you went to that trip to the Bedminster was the volumes of rubbish that are generated by an average-sized little town each day are pretty phenomenal. If that's going out to landfill, you've got to be very careful what you put underneath that waste, because that waste then will contain not only gold and stuff like that that you might see in sewage waste, but you'll find a lot of other toxic metals in a landfill. In the case of the Bedminster, you remember that first stage you saw the guys with the big front-end loaders shifting all the rubbish around? So in the first couple of years then, they have major problems with lead acid batteries being dumped in, and so that's why they've got the hand sort operation at the start. It's because they throw away the first year's production basically because of the amount of lead that was found in the final product. You can't use it as a land ameliorant if it's got lead in it. So there's a lot of toxic waste there. You must ensure then that underneath your landfill you've got a barrier that prevents the toxic metals moving into any aquifers below. The other major source of metals are mine sites. There's a huge number of small mines in this region that have been abandoned. When the mines were put in, there was no requirement for them to remediate the mines in any sense at all. These days, there's major requirements to remediate them. The classic example, though, is the Kidston gold mine. Which is just up a little bit inland. That one then closed down, I think, about 3 or 4 years ago now. And they have put in a major program to remediate that site, but apparently even there, where they're trying to do all the right things, it's actually much harder than they'd expected. In terms of the mines, the major issues are always the tailings dams, which are these holders for water. That have been involved with the actual process of obtaining the metal that they've been interested in. It's very hard then to ensure that those tailings dams are not breached, that they don't get broken at some point and then leach the highly contaminated water on the inside to the outside world. And also it's very tricky to ensure that the water that's inside the tailings dam doesn't percolate through to aquifers below. The tailings themselves are able to be mobilised. The sulphur, once oxidised, then ensures that any metals that are sitting in the tailings dams become soluble. Again, that then moves metals down into the water underneath. As an example of mobilisation of metals, up at Herberton, that's the old Mont Albion mine. So acid mine drainage there has changed the pH of the Walsh River to 4. Okay, so that's just one example locally. Now once you do that, you start mobilising all sorts of things. So the zinc, the lead and arsenic, and cadmium, all of these guys are way above the guidelines that you would expect. And there are plenty of little examples floating around here. So Bernd Lottermoser, that's the sort of area that he works in, looking at these sort of old mine sites and the issues that they've got. And he's never